You're doing so well and encouraging people. Oh, 你很棒,你做得那么好. And like, that's not very common in Finnish. We don't receive or give a lot of compliments, I think, generally. And if we do, it holds a really deep sense of significance.
Welcome to the Changing Scripts podcast, where we describe our language learning stories with a focus right now on Mandarin Chinese. My name is Stephanie, and I was an English language instructor for about 15 years, mostly in Asia. Also, I was learning how to read Mandarin Chinese for about a year before taking the current language learning break that I'm on now. This podcast is part of the Changing Scripts PodTube Experience, which is part podcast, part YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is where I share my own slow but steady language learning experience learning to read Mandarin Chinese. I share my challenges, questions, frustrations, and all. In this podcast, we chat both with people who grew up using Mandarin Chinese, as well as people like myself who learned it as an adult. In this particular podcast episode, we talk to Lota, who is a Finnish college student who lived in Shanghai, China between high school and university. I would say gap year, but it was more than a year. During part of that time, she took an intensive Chinese language course, and that's part of what she shares with us. She has continued her Chinese language learning since leaving Shanghai, but she's done it in a slightly different way using TV shows and some other things. Lota in this interview shares with us her intensive Mandarin Chinese classroom experience, how she used the language outside of the classroom, and so much more about her language learning process. She also compares Mandarin Chinese to Finnish, Swedish, and some other languages that she has at her disposal. A quick note that Lota's mother, Pia, was a guest on the Expat Rewind podcast last year, where she shared her first impressions of Shanghai after moving here from Finland. Hi, Pia! If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please feel free to connect with me on any social media platform. My handle is the same everywhere. It's Steph Fuccio. It's S-T-E-P-H-F-U-C-C-I-O. You can also see any and all of my projects at Steph Fuccio, same spelling, .weebly.com. That has all three of my podcasts. Let's meet Lota and find out what her language learning story was.
Thank you so much, Lota, for joining us on Changing Scripts podcast today.
Thank you. It's so nice to see you.
It's nice to see you too. So let's get started. Lota, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your language history?
Yeah. So I'm 21 years old. I have studied some English, some Swedish, and then I stayed in China for 1.5 years. And with my family, I studied Chinese in a university. And after that, I came back to Finland, and now I'm studying something else, like engineering and stuff.
The main focus of the podcast is on learning and using Mandarin Chinese. I do like to start with whatever languages came before they learned Mandarin Chinese. So let's dig back into your childhood. Well, what is your first language?
So my first language is Finnish.
And do you have any memories of learning it either before you started going to school or in a school setting?
Well, the first time I went to like a kindergarten, it was actually in Swedish. I learned Finnish at home before that. I remember my parents reading a lot of Finnish and Swedish books for me. So used to have those around home a lot, and we used to learn speaking and reading through a lot of stories and books. But that's mostly what I remember, my parents reading books for me and stuff like that. Yeah, don't really remember learning to speak Finnish for the first time, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, now that you say that, most people I talk to don't remember when, like, starting to speak or learning to speak, but a lot of people remember learning to read and learning to write.
Yeah, that's so true.
I wonder why that is. Maybe it's a lot harder. I don't know. What were the stories that they were reading to you?
Well, I think it was lots about like just children's books and stories written for children. I remember like stories about Finnish folklore, like Finnish old stories adapted to like modern books and yeah, stuff like that. Some really nice like children's books and picture books and stuff like that.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite book that you asked them to read again and again and again and again?
Yeah, I used to love a Finnish book. It was about a girl that went to an island to live with her grandfather, and they made like some honey breads, and I always wanted to hear the story and I wanted to eat the honey breads, and I really liked that.
That's really cool. What was? Yeah. Do you remember the name of that book?
It was something like Maya in the Archipelago or something like that, but I don't remember the actual.
That's really cool. So it sounds like you had the travel book pretty early in life then.
Yeah, we Great. Had a lot of stuff.
Do you have any memories of learning language or languages then?
I know that in the kindergarten, we also, like, it was in Swedish, so it was in the environment. The teachers would just speak Swedish to us, and we could speak Finnish or Swedish. And afterwards, I transferred to an English-speaking kindergarten because we had an expat year in the USA. So after that, I went to an English-speaking kindergarten. It was a lot about, like, I don't really remember them specifically teaching us the language. It was just around us, and we had, like, we used to play games and watch some cartoons and have, like, a lot of fun with it.
Right.
So it wasn't really, it wasn't ever really apparent that they were teaching a language. It was just in the way we interacted and used it in the daily life, I think.
Very nice, very nice. So it sounds like by first grade, you already have been exposed to and were using Finnish, Swedish, and English. Is that correct?
Yeah, to some degree. Like, not so much, but yeah, that was the beginning of, like, I had some understanding of those languages, yeah.
How big is the difference between Finnish and Swedish?
They have, like, influenced each other, or mostly Swedish has influenced Finnish. Mm-hmm. But, like the structure and the grammar is very different. It's very much about Swedish, I think, is more like flowing and stuff like that. Finnish is a lot about, like, changing the words according to the situation, and it's just a lot of, like, complicated structures. And Swedish is a lot, I think, like, it flows really nicely, and it's, like, really, they are not from similar country, like, how do you say, backgrounds. Mm-hmm. They don't have a similar origin. They are, like,
Oh, language families. Yeah.
Like, something like that. So it's more like Swedish and Norwegian, and those languages are very close to each other. Finnish is closer to, like, Estonian language.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very, very separate. Finland has been a part of Sweden, so that's why Finland has a lot of Swedish speaking people and like this Finnish Sweden culture.
And usually in Finnish, like, primary and secondary schools, is Finnish and Swedish both used interchangeably, or is it mostly Finnish?
In my school, it's mostly Finnish.
Yeah.
We have also Swedish schools, but we learn Swedish. You can choose to learn it from the fourth grade, mm-hmm. and then study through, like, through high school. But my city is very, there is a lot of Swedish-speaking people, so that's, like, a part of that. In other parts of Finland, it's not so, like, useful. There are not so many Swedish-speaking people. So,
wow.
Yeah, but mostly the teaching is mostly in Finnish, and then we have separate Swedish classes.
In your childhood, did you lean more towards liking speaking, or more towards reading, or where did you like to use language?
I think I really like the reading part. I always used to really like reading, like, in Finnish too. So I really loved reading stories, and I enjoyed the like books that we read at school. And yeah, I think that was also always the more something that I did more and I enjoyed more. And I didn't have a lot of practice in speaking mm-hmm. in school. So I really liked the reading part and the stories and stuff like that.
Me too. Do you, did you go to, book lovers unite. have many memories of going to libraries or bookstores as a kid?
Yeah, I don't remember the first ones really, because we went, like, the Finnish library system is really nice and friendly and stuff, and, like, for families, and it's really cool. So we used to go there a lot when I was small with my parents and grandparents, and we could just, like, play there and use the computers and play some fun games and stuff. So I think it was always a place that we loved to go to and just we got the first library cards, and then we could borrow books by ourselves, and I really liked that. So yeah, I always enjoyed a lot, like, going to library a lot.
I started going to libraries in the 70s. So there was mostly, let's see, books, some magazines, but not a lot of other media yet, like cassette tapes, even CDs, videos. A lot of those hadn't really come into libraries yet. But you're a little bit younger than me. Wink, wink. So what things were you checking out?
We had also like the books were like we used to borrow lots of books, of course, but then there was this game place in the library. Like they had this, it's a game in Finland. It's called the Moomin. It's a very Finnish story. So it's something that we could play on the computers and we didn't have at home at the time. So it was really fun. I think it was mostly the games on the computers and then the books mostly, yeah. Some, there were CDs and stuff, but I didn't really like borrow them much.
And at home, was it mostly Finnish that was being used?
Yeah, we used Finnish like in everyday language. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my mother would like read stories in other languages and then translate them, mm-hmm. but it was just for like in the evenings and stuff, so we just spoke Finnish, yeah.
Move on to Mandarin Chinese. So I think we're fast-forwarding quite a bit, right? So far we have Finnish, Swedish, and English. Did you learn any other languages before starting to learn Mandarin Chinese?
Yes, I did learn some German in middle school and high school, but it was very, it was very in a surface level, I think. I have forgotten most of that. But yeah, I used to go to the German lessons for like 2 years.
Was it a requirement for the school?
No, you had to pick some subject to like choose something, but it didn't have to be German. It didn't have to be any language.
Just out of curiosity, do you remember what the choices were?
It was French. I wanted to have French. Mm-hmm. Course wasn't arranged, there were not enough people, so I had German as the second choice, and then there was something like knitting and like making clothes. I don't know what's
oh wow called. Okay
like the crafts.
Wait, you could take knitting or a language, they were considered the same.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like
that's awesome.
Those were the like optional choices in great. High school.
Right.
Or then you could choose any of those. Or yes. Then you could have woodwork also.
Right.
Like building stuff. Or then you could have the like, how do you call that? Like making food. Mm-hmm. Just cooking lessons.
See, we had to take those. We had like a home economics class where we learned how to bake mostly really unhealthy desserts. And then we had like a shop class where we played with all of the dangerous equipment. And then we had to make a model home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a little, I don't know. It could have been fun, but yeah, it was weird. But I'm gonna think, what else? Oh, but we had to take a language and we only had three choices. We had German, Spanish, and French.
Did you study one of
them? This is in high school. I was really angry, awful teenager. So I took German because I thought it sounded the angriest. Kid you not. I was like, French is too pretty. I don't want to sound pretty. I want to be like stern, and you know, it has a harder sound to it. And I was attracted to that. So I took German, but I wasn't very good at learning languages. I still technically are not, but I really, really didn't know what to do. And so I can recognize some things now, but I never really got to the point where I could use it well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mandarin Chinese. When did you decide to start learning Chinese?
So we went to China after high school, and I didn't study any Chinese beforehand. Mm-hmm. I was doing like my graduation exams and I just didn't study anything. I was like, no, this is too much. And then we got to China. And I was there for 5 weeks. I didn't know if I was going to stay or go back to Finland and like study for university entrance exams. So I learned some things through like at home and through some apps and learned like basic phrases. But then after I went for a short time to Finland, I really wanted to come back to China and I wanted to stay there, but I needed the visa and I'm over 18, so I couldn't get the family visa through my parents.
So
you could get a visa if you go to a university program.
Right.
We enrolled to the university near by our home, and there was the interns program. You had to take that one so to get the visa, and it was like 4 lessons every day, like every five days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted for the whole semester, and I stayed for 1.5 years.
Oh my gosh. Wait, is that like how many hours a day? Was that 5 hours a day?
It was like 4 lessons, but it was around 8:30 to 12 p.m. So okay. It was not like 4 hours, but 4 lessons.
Still 8:30 to noon. 8:30.
It was really intense.
Yeah. Oh my God. For a year and a half.
Yeah.
Let's back up first to that 5-week program that you were in, and then we'll talk about the year and a half of the intensive program. I'll recover by then. Oh my gosh. Okay. So what was that? Yeah. What was that 5-week course like? Do you remember what? Sorry. Let's start with the apps first, then the 5 weeks, then the 1.5 year. So before you came to China, do you remember any of the apps that you were using to get those phrases?
It was actually the 5-week time that I was staying in China.
Oh, okay, okay.
First learning, I don't really remember the specific apps. There was someone with like a panda bear at the front, or maybe something like
that. Okay.
And it was just, and then there were like some like phrase apps that were saying something like, I remember trying to drill into my head like, 我不会说中文, like I don't speak Chinese. I tried to feel that over and over again, that I could use it if we go somewhere and don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really basic. I learned from my parents like right and left to say like taxis and some like thank you and goodbye and stuff like that. So it was really, really like, I didn't really pay a lot of attention. I just really like, I wanted to learn, but it was really chill and just like, just really, really basic and a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's the apps. So during the 5 week, you were in a 5 week intensive course, right? That's what you said.
No. I was staying in China first. When we came back, like when we moved, right. I was only for 5 weeks. I was just having a holiday and.
Oh, okay. Oh my God. That's so much fun. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That was so nice. It was during the summertime, and I had almost graduated from high school, but I had to go back for one, like 3 exams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I first came to China for 5 weeks, and then I flew back to Finland for like a month to do the exams, and I came back to the intensive course.
Right. So the phrases you were learning, it sounds like you were just learning them to use them as you were going around Shanghai.
Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't really reading the characters very much yet, were you?
No. I didn't learn any characters. Okay. I didn't have any clue of them. Yeah.
Ha ha ha. I think it's coming. All right. So you were there here for 5 weeks. Compared to even just during those 5 weeks when you were learning those phrases, how did that compare to the other languages you had learned in the past?
I think it was kind of very different because of like you had to start from such a beginning level.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was no beforehand knowledge of Chinese language or the tones or anything. So it really started from the really basics.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the methods I was using, it was quite similarish to the ones that I've been using in Finland, just like hearing a word and trying to learn it many times.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of like finding a word somewhere and then using that and trying to kind of, I really trusted to my parents at that time. They knew some Chinese, so I really... really was just like, okay, that's cool. I can like have fun and they just speak for me.
Okay, I guess I better come clean to the listeners. Dear listeners, Lotus
Pia's mom, Pia, was on another podcast that I do called Expat Online. She read lovely, lovely blog posts from her first year in China. So I know your mom studied the language too. Did she start studying before you or kind of the same time?
Yeah, she was really studying before me. She studied in Finland and she studied a lot, and she was really immersed in the studying already before.
Wow.
But yeah, she was just, we went to China and she was buying stuff in Chinese and speaking in Chinese. So I was like, wow, it's so cool.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So then you left and came back and you did a year and a half intensive course.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Yeah. So what was that class like? For example, how many people, how many classes a day, any of that information?
Yeah, it was really nice. It was, we had around 28 students, I think, 20 to 30 students, I guess. We were from around the world, from very different backgrounds. Some of the people were working in China and they had a job with the intensive course, and some had learned some, and others were kind of planning to do a university course in China. Wow. And so it was the age range was from 16 to, I think, 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And it was it was really, really a really diverse group of people. And then when, we started from very basics. We first went there and started learning the pronunciations and stuff and the tones. And we had, for the first course, we had two teachers. First in the morning, we had two lessons with speaking teacher. And then, this was mostly about learning how to speak. But also we had some reading in that class. And then we had two lessons of writing teacher after a break. So it was four lessons a day, and first two lessons of speaking and reading, and then two lessons of writing, and then we had some homework to do at home.
What was in the writing classes in the beginning level?
Yeah, we started, I didn't know that we would actually even learn characters, so that was really surprising. I was kind of hoping that we, in the beginning, I was kind of hoping that we didn't have to, because I thought it would be very, very hard, as it is. But it was really fun, actually. So we just had these we had these practice sheets that our teacher was very, very I got this elementary school feeling. So we would write the same character 20 times, and with really, really easy ones Ko and the people Ren and stuff. Yeah. So it was really, really easy, and we wrote that 20 times a day at home, and then
at that point, after a few weeks or months of these classes, were you leaning towards liking more of the speaking aspect of it or the writing aspect of it?
Yeah, I really think I was at the beginning more keen about the speaking. Mm-hmm. I think it was really nice, and I thought it was kind of easy, the level we were starting in, and it was nice. But the challenge of writing characters was really cool. I didn't expect it to be so fun and so useful with memorizing the words.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. I remember we had some students from countries that also have similar Hanzis, Japan and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were already writing, and I was feeling like a first grade student doing the. It was really a challenge and a struggle, but it was really cool. It was really fun to learn that new way of writing, and then being able to actually understand some easy sentences and texts, and kind of learning the way that you can actually understand them. And it went a lot hand in hand, the speaking and the writing. So we would learn how to say something and then also write it and connect.
Yeah, that's really good. So they're complementing each other, learning both of them. That's really, really good. Oh, I think I nearly cried the first time I could read a full sentence in Chinese.
Yeah.
It was such a basic sentence too. And it took me a minute. I could read it And then I almost was like about to tear up. And then I realized, oh, wait, what does it mean? Like I had to like kind of backtrack and like look at the meaning. And I got what it meant.
Yeah.
But it's so basic. But it just seems, it's such a different script, you know? It just so challenging. I'm still like way super low level, but that just feels like such a happy moment. Yeah.
What if you could transform your next game night into an unforgettable language learning experience? Hi, my name is Matthew Boyle, founder of Language Card Games and friend of Stephanie Fuccio and Changing Scripts. I'm here today with a special offer. During the month of May, you can apply the coupon code CHANGINGSCRIPTS when you check out at languagecardgames.com to save on any of our games. Since 2016, we have been providing innovative products to language gamers, and now we call you to join us at the table. Learning languages is a big deal, and we want to give you a hand. That's why we've created games for everyone, suitable for beginning and expert language learners, young and old. What's more, we provide free shipping to any location worldwide. So if you're looking for something to take your study sessions, classes, or game nights to the next level, this is it. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Changing Scripts. Enjoy the rest of the show, and later stop by to see us at languagecardgames.com, how gamers learn languages.
So a year and a half. So did you end up taking any of the HSK tests when you were studying?
I actually didn't. I think I should have. It would have been really nice or like a good thing to have. Like I really was anxious about exams, so I didn't want to. I was like consciously avoiding them, which wasn't the best choice. It would of course be like a great thing to do and just like take the challenge and step like out of the comfort zone and do some exams. We did have a lot of exams at school. Sure. Really don't correlate with any HSK stuff, so I don't have the HSK level thing, or I didn't ever do those exams. But we did have the choice, we did have the opportunity through school to do them, and many people did, and I think that would be really great.
Yeah, there's still you still have plenty of time.
I should do them.
I've taken 1, 2, and 3, and 1 and 2 was a lot easier than the practice materials, and then 3 hit and it was a completely different creature. It just got exponentially harder. And I'm supposed to be studying for 4. I think I might take 4 next December, not this December, like 2020.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Maybe. It's just the leap between the levels is just so insanely different. They probably told you this, but the HSK is like the reading, listening, and writing. And then the HSKK is the speaking test. So it's actually 2 different tests.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really different than a lot of other language tests. But I really love the characters and playing with them. So I was like, oh, I can take this without the stress of trying to speak. So that for me is really, really by far the hardest part of all this. When you first started studying in the intensive program, did you think you were going to stay in it that long, or were you doing it semester by semester and deciding?
I was deciding semester by semester. I didn't know that I would stay in China for so long. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know if I would stay there at all, like after the 5 weeks. But I wanted to take them more. And I think the point was, like, after the first semester, I was really sure, like, yeah, of course, I'm going to do a second one. I want to learn more of this language that I began to learn. And I want to have, like, somewhat of a foundation of it. And I also really didn't want to leave China yet. I wanted to stay in Shanghai. And to that, I think the third course that it was, like, 3 courses, 1 course every half year. Mm-hmm. So after the second course, I think I felt really much like this is the point where I'm feeling like I could leave right now, but I really want to get a better foundation and maybe a deeper sense of the language. Like I'm in that point of now, if I still do 1 course, I would learn so much more and kind of get maybe a deeper level of speaking and stuff. But after that time, I felt like the three courses was really nice. Then I felt like I didn't have like a goal in it. I didn't have any sort of professional stuff, so I wanted to come back and study something else. But yeah, that was really, it was really a choice every half year. So if you want to,
That's really nice. That's amazing. Let's talk about some of your study methods. I know they gave you homework in the class, but did you, like, what kind of materials did you have? Like textbooks or flashcards, or were you still using apps? Like anything that you were, can you tell us anything that you were, anything and everything that you were using to study the language during these classes?
Yeah, we had books on the classes. Like we had the textbook and the exercise book, and we would read the chapters, and we had homework. We mostly had homework about reading something. We had some sentences or words that we had to read in the WeChat group, which was really fun, but also you could get the feedback from it straight away. We would send a WeChat message speaking Chinese, and then the teacher would kind of give you feedback straight away. And then we had the homework sheets, and we had some homework stuff like filling in sentences and stuff. I mostly relied on the things we had in the class, because it was really, like, I think that class could hold up a lot of your studying. It was very much, it's really structured. It had a lot of, it had a, like a very wide range of things. It was really like we could rely on the teachers and the lessons a lot. And then the stuff that I did at home, I did the homework, and then we did have a really nice book, something like about, it was, I think, a HSK level 1 book of characters, which explained the, I don't really know the name of this one, but it was really, it had like explaining the characters' origins and then the similarities in different characters, and you group them together.
Was it on the radicals, like the 200 something, like the radicals, like the smallest component of the characters?
I think the book was something like that. It had the characters grouped by some radicals.
I lost a few months to that stuff because I started going to the bookstore on Fuzhou and buying all the books on like the origins of the most 100 common characters. And I would just read about the history, and they'd have those timelines of it used to look like this, and then the character changed to this, to this, to this, and this is what it looks like now. And I was like, so cool.
That's so fascinating.
It really, really is. I mean, it's a complicated and a challenging language, especially to read, but it's got such a long history that, especially in that beginning time when I didn't know a lot, I didn't know how much I didn't know in the language. Yeah. It was fun to read about it before I got into learning how to use it.
Yeah.
So much fun. It is a slippery, slippery slope, but at least 2 months of my life were gone just reading that stuff. It's so much fun. And Pleco, did you use Pleco, the dictionary app?
Yeah, we used that a lot.
That has a little bit of the history, I think, in some of the...
Yeah.
I think. Hold on. I've got the phone. I think it does. Let me look up a word. Quick, pick a word.
China. Do you have
it? Zhongguo. Found it. Okay, let's see. Does it tell us... Dear listeners, if you have the Pleco app, feel free to follow along. No, it doesn't have it in this one. No stroke, characters. Yeah, I guess a little bit, because it breaks it down on the characters page.
Yeah.
A little bit. Cool. Not quite as much of the history. Oh, that's what they need. We need to tell them that. They need a like another column with the history, and then they're showing the character. Useful, but super, super fun. What part of the language that you ended up liking surprised you that you liked it so much?
Well, I love the history parts of something. Like you had the I don't remember what it's called in Chinese, but we had the four character.
You learned the, what is it, Chung? The four character idioms?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, really? Holy cow.
We learned like two, and
okay.
You learn more, so not much, but you would learn more if you would like go further.
Sure.
Like in the fourth course or something, but we learned two, and I was really surprised with the like culture behind everything. Mm-hmm. And I also really enjoyed like the way that all the chapters we had in the books and stuff, it was also, I feel like, I don't know a lot about Chinese culture like outside that, but there was always an element of like also teaching something about Chinese culture or Chinese history or Chinese like modern day culture and stuff. So I really enjoyed the way that you can learn to speak the language and also learn to act at the same time in ways that could maybe be according to the culture, or kind of like in like learning about the culture at the same time.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. And I feel like the way that I speak in Chinese, because it's so much founded on that university program and like the books and stuff, it's very different than the stuff that I would normally say in Finnish, maybe. Like I would, Finnish language is very like, very, very like chill and very like, we don't have a lot of like cool words and stuff. We have a lot, it's very like, I feel it's very straightforward in a way.
Yeah.
Like basic Chinese, I do speak in a very different way. And the things that I would say, I would never say maybe in Finnish.
Yeah.
Like I would never maybe say something that I have learned to say in Chinese, in Finnish. So I really enjoyed the learning the language from not only translating from Finnish what I would mean to say, but also learning kind of the phrases and expressions that you can use to maybe... They're more common in China, maybe.
For a second there, it looked like you were thinking of examples as you were doing that. Can you think of an example of something you would say in Chinese that you would never say in Finnish?
Yeah, I don't know if this is something that many Chinese people even say. Yeah, I don't know if that's something that people actually use. Mm. But let me see. At least at the lessons, we learned to maybe compliment people and say stuff like, oh, you're doing so well and sing cooler and stuff like that's really good and encouraging people. Like this is like really nice example, I think. That's really cool that I wouldn't have, it's not like learned without Chinese learning the language. So we would do like, oh, 你很棒, 你做得那么好, and like expressing that someone has done something really well and that's really and has worked hard. That's not very common in Finnish. We don't speak a lot about other people's achievements. We don't receive or give a lot of compliments, I think, generally. And if we do, it holds a really deep sense of significance. Like if you say something like to someone, you say like, I love you, or you're so nice, or you're so pretty, or something. If you say that in Finnish, I feel it has a really strong meaning of like, wow, you really think that, that I'm So that's something very different. I think it's because Finnish is just a small country and with not many people and stuff like that. So it's more about like that's the language also has something. I don't know if that's clear.
It's incredibly clear. Incredibly clear. I'm just laughing, going, oh gosh, do I admit to the Americanism that is the elephant in the room right now? We notoriously over compliment, I've heard. It seems normal to me to
That's so like, nice. I think so. Hello, nice, though.
Oh, this looks like picking out something that somebody's wearing that you like, or if they look happy or they look relieved, like it's just sort of like saying hello to us. And especially in the classroom, I was the teacher for a long time, constantly complimenting students and on their hard work and stuff.
Yeah.
Is very, very, very natural to me. But I know, and I've been told that a lot of cultures don't do that so freely all the time.
But that's so nice too. I really like that. And I think that's also like something that could be we in Finland could learn more about, these cultures that do vocalize something that someone else does well, because that's so nice.
Yeah,
it really is encouraging.
I do understand, like some people say that Americans do it too much and so it seems like it's not meant.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it seems fake.
Yeah.
And personally, yeah. I don't really say anything. I would stop myself from saying something negative, but I wouldn't necessarily say something positive to someone just to say something. I don't.
Yeah, really, sure.
But I understand it can come across that way.
I think that that's just something that I really enjoyed, that through learning a language, you can kind of adopt different ways of behaving.
Yeah.
Like in China, you could say something like, "Sing cooler," like really great, which I wouldn't be comfortable maybe saying to a Finnish person.
Right.
In Finland. So I've been able to like kind of adopt different ways of behaving.
Yeah.
That was what I really enjoyed.
We might expand to other languages with different scripts, different written scripts in 2020. But that's not this year, that's next year. This year, I want to gather as many folks as I can who are interested in language learning stories, even if we are centered, quote-unquote, only just around Mandarin Chinese. How can we do that? Word of mouth seems to be the scientifically proven best way to share podcasts. I kid you not, look it up. So, could you please send this podcast to just one person that you think might enjoy it? Or, if you can't think of one person, could you just please screenshot it and share it in any social media that you're in? Changing Scripts podcast can be found anywhere and everywhere that podcasts can exist. So all people need is just the title, Changing Scripts. So a quick screenshot and I love it, or I like it, or I think you'd enjoy this, would simply be the most wonderful thing you could do for this podcast. Thank you so much for spreading the word about the Changing Scripts podcast and us geeking out and talking about our language learning stories.
Early on this time around, because we lived in China before, but early on this time, in the first few months, I picked up on the few words I could hear. I noticed that people were repeating them a lot. Even just, yes, like dui dui dui. There, I noticed that like the repetition was there, and I started to do that a ton. Whereas if I was in the U.S. or anywhere else that where I was speaking English, I said, yes, it would seem like I'd be pushy. But here, it just seems naturally repeat it. And I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, and I was just like, don't say it once. Say it three times in a row and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I noticed if I did that here, people would be like, oh, and they just continue the conversation. And I'm like, it worked. Oh, my God, it worked. Yeah. Or if I said it once, they'd be like, waiting.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure, if I would say that, or like, hada, 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 and they're just, and if I said good to someone, they'd be like, at home, they'd be like, what's wrong with you? Why is it so good? What's happening? Like, why didn't you just say great? What's wrong with your vocabulary?
Yeah, well, that's kind of different level of using expression. Yeah.
I talk about coming into and out of languages. I don't know where I got that from. But you came to China, you had Finnish, Swedish, and English already at your disposal. Mm-hmm. When you were learning Mandarin Chinese and you were like looking for a word to say something, what language came out first?
I think in the beginning, well, the class was in English. So mm-hmm. you would have to, if you wanted to speak, you would have to do that. But I find a lot of similarities in Swedish and Chinese. There probably nothing more, probably not many things actually in common, but there are some words that are almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
So like something like kan, it has different meanings in Swedish and Chinese, but they sound very similar.
Yeah.
So I think that's, and afterwards I have like, afterwards, like that's the beginning, but I've been working in Swedish in Finland, like using Swedish as a customer's, in customers. So I had like really awkward moments there when he had to speak Swedish. And then I have been saying like, something in Chinese comes out because it has become the stronger language in recent years.
Oh, that's so funny. So when you had to fill the gap, the Chinese came through. The brain is an amazing, amazing creature. Were you a flashcard person at all when you were first learning Chinese vocabulary, like the words and Hanzi characters and things?
Yeah, I had this, like, you can buy in China those nice flashcard things that you can write yourself. So I did do some words in the beginning when there were fewer words in the first exam. I did write them down and kind of try to learn them that way. Yeah, that's when in the very beginning, when we had more words coming at us in the second and third course, I didn't do that anymore. But in the first course, yeah.
Did you make a conscious decision to stop making them, or you just kind of didn't? Why did you stop?
I think in the first course, it was still manageable. you could still learn most of the words, or probably you could have learned most of the words in the second and third course also with hard work. But in the first course, it was possible to learn the words and individually and do the stuff. I felt that the changing from the first course to the second course was also a lot about, in the first course, we had learned the basics and we would learn everything very carefully. Mm-hmm. And the second course, we would more so not go so deep in specific things, a longer chapter and more words and a lot of using words that you were not maybe comfortable using yet, or you didn't know that well, but they were in. So I think the flow of the language in general, like how much we were hearing and reading mm-hmm. and how many words we had, it increased a lot. So I think that's when the time I didn't anymore do the, like it would have taken a lot more time from yourself to specifically individually like learn every word and just concentrated in learning like the how would you say that, learning like larger concepts and learning a lot, maybe more surface level, but it would like go deeper during the time.
Are you still learning Chinese now?
Well, I have not been learning. I have been listening to a couple of podcasts. During the holidays, we watched a Chinese TV series on Netflix.
What are you watching? What show?
It was the one, do you know this Meteor Garden?
No. Yeah. I'm grabbing my app. I haven't watched any yet, but I've had some recommended to me, and I've been using, do you know Vicky Rokutan? That sounds Japanese. This blue app down here. I don't know if it's coming through. This one here. It has, it's free, which is my favorite part. And it has different like TV shows and things from like Korea, China, Taiwan, Japan.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I've been meaning to start watching something, but every time I start, I realize how little I can understand and I think about coming back to it.
That's so nice. Thanks.
How are you watching it? Is it online or?
The podcasts are online and on the podcast app, and then the Meteor Garden is on Netflix.
Oh, okay. And what is that about?
It's really nice. It's about a girl who goes into university and then like manages life there.
Yeah.
And my sister had, I think it's popular around my sister's friends, like even those who haven't been in China. So she introduced us to that. And then we spent the whole holiday watching it with everyone in the family, and everyone wanted to see that thing.
So cool. And okay, are you watching it with or without subtitles? And what language are the subtitles in if you're using?
Yeah, I've been watching with subtitles. I wouldn't understand the whole, like I would understand some sentences and kind of be able to follow some of it, but wouldn't understand the whole plot. So I've been using English subtitles.
Okay.
Chinese for me. There wasn't even like Chinese subtitles for me.
Really? Oh, shoot. Okay.
There might be, but I just didn't use them. So I just said.
Wow.
But I didn't start studying yet. I would like to go, I can do at the university, I can like read Chinese as a, we have to do a language course here too. Mm-hmm. So I can do Chinese and I would like to begin it in like the next semester studying in August.
Let's go back to the 1.5 year intensive program. Did you ever get any on any social media? And let me think, what is it? Weibo or QQ? QQ is so old at this point. Like Weibo, or were you doing anything on Chinese social media in Chinese?
Not much. I did listen like some, well, we had the WeChat groups at school.
Yeah.
It was a big part of the learning stuff too. And we were speaking Chinese there. That was the first time I wrote in Chinese with the phone and stuff. That was most of it. I did follow some people in WeChat who were writing in Chinese.
Yeah.
I didn't interact a lot. I didn't write a lot in Chinese. I always felt kind of self-conscious of speaking like through text in Chinese. So I didn't do a lot of that. But we did, we wrote in WeChat. And I used QQ Music, but that's the most of it. So I didn't use much of Chinese social media. I think I was mostly introduced to it in the very, like I know that some people who have been studying in Chinese universities for a long time, they had a really nice range of apps and stuff, but I didn't really get to use them so much. So I just had the WeChat and...
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a fair number of them, and they're very active groups from what I've heard. I installed Weibo and I signed up for an account, and that's about as far as I got. I would like to at some point, but there's so much to do. And what was it? UQ? Yeah. I haven't even gotten on UQ. I have gotten on QQ Music.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it. And I know there's a lot of video sites, like really short video sites that are really popular now.
Okay.
Doku, I think, is one of them. Is that TikTok? I think they're connected. Oh, gosh, I don't know. I keep hearing the names of them, but I just...
Yeah.
I don't know. I already have so much. I almost have 200 podcasts in my podcast player. So I'm I'm a little bit right now. Yeah. And those are just the ones I'm listening to, not the ones I'm creating. So it's, how about in person? Did you use the language that you learned a lot when you were out and about in Shanghai? And no judgment from me here. I barely can get a sentence out. So
I didn't have many Chinese speaking friends. So I didn't have like most of my friends were international, some from we would speak English. I did speak Chinese I did want to use it in stores, and when we used the taxi, a lot of the taxi drivers were so nice, and they kind of wanted to speak Chinese, and they would start a conversation, and it was so nice. They were really patient, and they were more most of the time really encouraging. Everyone was so nice about if you were not speaking a lot of Chinese, but would speak something. So that's a lot of the times that I had conversations in Chinese. Also, we had some very nice people at the compound we were living at. Some of the people that were working there, mm-hmm. We would have some conversations and start speaking Chinese. So that was mostly it. Yeah, some doing daily stuff and speaking Chinese. I love that, and we did a lot of that. Yes. And also, some of my friends at school were also not speaking English so much. So we used Chinese as a way to communicate. So that that was really...
So you had built-in motivation to practice the language.
Yes, that was the most... But I didn't meet many Chinese friends in China. Now in Finland, that has been really motivating, is to meet some Chinese people studying here and maybe have a word with, have a conversation with them and speak some. So that's where I've been. I think that most of the times that I've used Chinese, in conversations, has been more after I left China. In China, it was more about kind of the very basic conversations and daily.
It's impossible to separate language and culture and place. Yeah. So how would you compare Shanghai to where you're living now?
I really like Shanghai. I'm living in Helsinki, so a lot smaller. There are only it's a lot of space. It's very spacious. There's a lot of nature and stuff. There are not many people, and the buildings are smaller, and it's a really small place compared to any, of course, to Shanghai, but Finland is very small also. I really like the feeling in Shanghai that you could have so many opportunities to do stuff. You could just go exit your house and go somewhere and find something fun to do. And that's something that you don't so much have in Helsinki.
What do you tell people when you tell them, oh, I lived in China for a year and a half? Or what did they ask you about China? Do they ask you questions about it?
Yeah, I think many people don't ask many questions. I think that's, I don't know, I feel that's maybe a common experience. Some people do ask about the language. Many people ask about how much do you speak? Can you speak Chinese? Can you have a conversation in Chinese? Or is it just some words? And some people, I really love it when people ask if you can speak some Chinese, if you can demonstrate something. So that's something that people sometimes ask. But it's not too many questions, I think. Many people just ask about how well do you speak and stuff like that. Yeah. Do you get a lot of questions when you?
No.
Yeah.
There's a really strong. I haven't been back for 2 years this time. We've been in China most of the time that we've been back this time. But we did live in Nanjing, China for the History Buffs Nanking 8 years ago, I think. And when we went back after that, we went back for graduate school and people kind of stop. Like you'd say, where did you come from? I just came back from China. And they just kind of like they didn't know what to do because it wasn't a state. Yeah. In the U.S. They're like, yeah. I don't know what the next question is when you mention a country that I know so little about.
Yeah.
But that was 8 years ago, and there's a lot more tension between the two countries now.
Yeah.
Even though the more I'm here, the more I see the similarities between the two places, but I don't think a lot of Americans think of China like that right now. So, yeah, I don't know. It's tricky. I'm kind of hoping through the language in this podcast, it's a shameless plug for look beyond the politics and look at the language of people and the places and the opportunities. Because there's so much, as you mentioned, there's so much opportunity on so many levels here right now. And I think a lot of people don't see that because there's so much other stuff that gets out there in the media. Okay, shameless plug over. Oh, okay. So at the end of the interviews, I tend to ask people what questions are missing. And we had Lucy from Sixth Tone. She asked, what languages do you dream in?
Oh, that's so nice.
You've got a lot at your disposal. Yeah. So what languages do you dream in?
I usually dream in Finnish. I remember one nightmare that I had when I came back to Finland. I was doing a Chinese. This is so funny. I think this must have been like before my entrance exams to university or something. So it was an exam related one. And I had a dream that I didn't know how to write a story in Chinese. And I didn't remember the word guanggao or something like advertisement. I don't even know if that's the right word. But I had to remember that in the dream. And I just couldn't remember that. So that has been. That's when I remember seeing some like Hansis in the dream or something like that. But mostly I dream in Finnish, I think.
And wait, the dream where you couldn't remember that word, was that in Finnish or in Chinese?
Like, I think it was in Chinese. Like it has Chinese in the dream also, but maybe in Finnish mostly. Yeah.
When you were in China and in doing that intensive program, what language were you still dreaming in Finnish then?
I'm not really sure. I think I had some dreams in English and maybe something in Chinese too, but mostly in Finnish. I don't remember really specific, like.
Wow.
Do you dream in other, like Chinese also, or do you dream?
I am a crazy person. I dream in languages I don't know and I don't know what they are.
Oh, that's so cool.
No, it's not. No. I'd much rather be able to use a language in real life, but I am a notoriously awful speaker in every single language. And so I have woken up from dreams in my life and been like, what language is that? And I'll try to like keep repeating some of the words I heard and like walk over to a computer and try to find it. And I just haven't had any success finding that. Like, I'll wake up and go, that seemed like an Eastern European language. I wonder what that was. Or, when I was studying Spanish, I would have a full-on dream where it was almost like a soap opera, the gorgeous man, and, of course, me, and all this stuff was happening around us. Yeah. And we were talking to each other in Spanish, and I could hear part of my brain was like, what are we saying to each other? Because I didn't know what was happening.
That's so cool. I think I have had something like that before, too. Like, not understanding what's actually being said in the dream.
It's so weird. I don't think I've met anybody else. And I really wonder, what does this mean? Like, how can that happen in my dreams? And yet, in real life, I haven't been able to really get into a language yet.
Yeah. Ah, that's so weird. Yeah.
Couple more questions for you. Jeremy Tang, author and playwright and possible Bollywood star, although he probably hates that joke by now. he asked about the ownership that people have. Like, what language do they feel they have ownership over? What language is theirs? And you have a lot of languages at your disposal. Which language do you feel is your language?
That's really cool. That's a good question. I think... Of course, Finnish. Like, I feel Finnish is very, it's so natural, and it's the thing that I feel most myself in. Like, if I speak Finnish, I don't have to, it just comes very naturally, and I can demonstrate my feelings and stuff best through it. Mm-hmm. I think speaking wise, I think I'm most, like, about the foreign languages I've learned, I've most used to speak in Chinese, because it was so much about using the language. English and Swedish, I'm more comfortable maybe reading and stuff, because I've done a lot of that. But Chinese, I feel like I can speak comfortably on the level that I know, which is not much, but I can still use it, because the school was so much about using it and kind of getting to do the stuff that you would, like, just going to the situations where you could speak and stuff. So yeah, but I don't think that I own that language, but I feel comfortable speaking it.
Yeah. It's funny, I just realized I haven't asked you where you were studying. Were you studying at Jiao Tong University?
No, I was actually at, I know many people go there, and it's really cool. I was in Donghua University.
Ah, okay, yeah.
It has two, I think it has two locations in Shanghai, and right. I was the one, I don't even know, maybe in Changning.
Okay. Because I still think in the back of my head, I want to do like a 1 month intensive at some point, maybe 2 months, because I want like a little more of a push at some point. And that's really cool. Wow. Okay.
Oh, that is great. I would recommend it.
Tanya Crossman, who wrote the book Misunderstood about TCKs, She asked, how did you learn emotional language, like how to communicate your feelings in any except your first language?
Yeah. I think it was most, that's really good. That's really good
question. These are smart people.
yeah. I think it was a lot about expressing stuff, like in English and Swedish, we were using the language at school. Like, it was the main language in my first grade. Mm-hmm. So we would have to express stuff that we were doing ourselves. Like, we had to express things, and they would say something like, no, that's not the way you say that, you can say it this way.
Yeah,
and this was the way, I think, but that's really hard. I think I still do struggle with that, and because there's so much that you can, like, communicate non-verbally maybe, and through, like, through expressions and stuff that might differ in different cultures also and languages. So I think I still do struggle expressing certain languages, and I also fall into this Finnish non-expressiveness thing, because I think we as the culture are not, it's not a very expressive language. So I sometimes notice if I'm speaking English or Chinese, mm-hmm. that I kind of have fallen into this, like, I'm very happy and I'm really nice, but I haven't communicated it, and then it might seem. So that's a really good question. I think that's something I still do sometimes struggle with, and kind of, yeah, expressing stuff also outwards, not just thinking that, yeah, this is really nice, and not just, yeah.
Especially when you're learning languages in a classroom, there isn't a lot of time usually spent on talking about your emotions in that language.
Yeah.
Like, how do you learn that? So future language goals, you mentioned that you wanted to take a course at your current university in Chinese. Yeah. Do you want to add any other languages on at any other point? I mean, you've got quite a bit already.
Yeah, I would really like to study some French. Mm-hmm. I've been studying in this web page. It's something called Memrise or something like that.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. So I've been doing that, and I've been learning, like, some French phrases, not many. So I would really like to speak that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to do maybe like sometime in another country also, and learn another language. That would be so nice. I would really like to do. And also do maybe some exchange in China to kind of learn my vocabulary in my, like, engineering vocabulary, my accurate, like, related to my studies, so I could use it.
That's really cool.
That would be really nice.
It would be so easy for you to find a language exchange partner. You'd have to interview them to make sure you got the right one. But you'd be
totally. That'd be so nice.
They'd be falling over to be your language exchange partner.
You'd be so excited too.
Oh my goodness. Okay, one more from Vaughn, who has been studying Chinese for 5 years in Los Angeles. With all the technology being developed with languages, if there was the chip that we could put in with a new language, just boom, and you could speak it fluently, would you want to do that, or would you want to go through the process of learning the language?
Oh, I would really like to go through the process. I think that's so nice. You can learn, like, I love the things that you have to kind of, I think it's really good to go through the process and find out all the cool things while you go and kind of find out stuff and find something that you didn't know before. And then you can just, new worlds are opening at the same time. So I think that's really cool. I would like to, of course, like in situations, it would be so nice to just be able to communicate and have that ability to like express yourself in a foreign language when you're living. But I wouldn't give up the process. It's so nice.
Do you know, nobody yet has said they just want the chip. Not one person.
That's so nice. Yeah.
I'm the closest that we've gotten to saying, yes, I want the chip, because I've said, well, if I get the information and the culture and the ability to pick from that, then maybe. But I want the ability to choose the words that I'm using, not just it coming out.
Yeah.
And I want that cultural bit that's attached to it.
Yeah.
There's something about the process.
It's so exciting and fun and sometimes really hard and really, but the difficulty is the like fun part too.
Definitely. Well, it's now your turn. What question do you want to add to this list?
I would like to ask, what kind of struggles have you overcome with learning a new language? Like maybe what has been the kind of things that you have had to push yourself to do when you're learning it? For example, like were you nervous to speak the language or were you nervous to write, and how did you overcome that?
Can you answer your own question?
I think the Hansi writing was really difficult at first, like the whole learning a different way to write and feeling like you already know how to write and you already know how to read text, but now you had to learn it from the very beginning. It was very hard, but really, really rewarding during the time. Also, I think the speaking part, just like being having the courage to start a conversation and speak, even though you're not sure about if you know how to say stuff. And I think that was something we learned at the school about Chinese. They just said like, okay, come into the front and say something and have a dialogue or have a conversation. And that was really cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much too.
Absolutely, positively wonderful.
Thank you. It was really nice. I'm so happy to have this conversation.